Yeah, he and Matt Bryant are the only players on the team who are older than I am.
Oh boy, let's see here. 16 minutes. That's the cold open right there. Welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Podcast, the official podcast of the Atlanta Falcons on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I am DW, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, the Joom, Petter of Dogs, first of her name, the Daenerys Targaryen of Falcons Twitter, the Quick Draw McGraw of Facebook Messenger, the Trash Talker Supreme, the one and only Touchdown Ball, she will not be bossed, Gina Matt Online Thomas. Gina, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, David. Thanks. How are you?
Fantastic. And today we've got someone back who hasn't been on the podcast for a while, which makes us a little bit sad, but we've got him back after a long hiatus, and he is one of our friends from Cat Scratch Reader, and he is also one of the hosts of the Keep Sounding podcast for the Panthers, also on the SB Nation Podcast Network. Of course, we're talking about our one and only friend, Brian Beversluis. Brian, how are you doing, man?
It's Beversluis, goddammit.
Beversluis. The margaritas are kicking in, buddy. I'm sorry.
Jesus Christ. I'm good. It's been a season. It's been a last 6 weeks. I'll put it that way.
I think we both have many things to ruminate about. So with that, we're just gonna jump straight into it because arguably, this Sunday's game between the Falcons and the Panthers is the, as I said on Twitter, is the sadness injury bowl. Both teams are coming in pretty banged up. I think throughout the season, both the Panthers and the Falcons have suffered some pretty big setbacks in the injury department. However, the Panthers at one point were 6-2, and going back to the Steelers game several weeks ago, that started this six-game slide that they're currently on. So, Brian, obviously, you know, some Falcons fans probably keep up with other NFC South teams, but you could tell us a little bit better than most what has happened, what took place that took the Panthers from essentially a lock for a wild card to now being essentially out of the playoff race.
That would be Cam Newton's arm degrading over the course of the season for the most part. They got punched in the mouth by the Pittsburgh Steelers coming off a bye week on Monday Night Football, or Thursday Night Football, I should say. And just got, from there, teams figured out that Cam couldn't throw the ball down the field anymore. Their defense wasn't really all that good to begin with. Like their offense was definitely carrying them through the first 8 weeks of the season. So now we're looking at a team that can throw the ball maybe 10 yards down the field at best, who pretty much predicate their offense on the number of things they can do. So you've taken away a big part of what they do. Offense struggles. Defense is, I guess, exposed in a way because their pass rush wasn't that great. So that just created that just a overall collapse on pretty much every side of the ball. And yeah, here we are. Panthers are 6-8 now. It's great.
I think if there's anyone that can sympathize, I think Gina is probably Falcons fans this year.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially considering the Falcons just ended a 5-game slide coming into this game by winning against the woefully bad Arizona Cardinals. So we're going to jump into this matchup because I know this is it's sort of this sadness bowl. But you know, Gina, if you look at these two teams and where they are from an injury standpoint, obviously losing Cam Newton, Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but he hasn't actually been put on injured reserve. He's just being sat for the game. Is that correct?
He's essentially the third string quarterback. Yeah.
Okay. Which seems interesting since, to your point, he's been suffering a long-standing injury the entire season, it seems like. Gina, when you look at this and you think about what has happened with these two teams, What's the story? What's the story here? Why is this so significant? I mean, these were two teams, arguably, a lot of people felt like the Falcons and the Panthers were going to be the top of the NFC South in 2018. And it looks like they may actually be two of the worst teams in the NFC South.
Yeah. I mean, going into the season, I think everybody but Bucks fans looked at the division and thought that, you know, the Bucks would definitely be the worst. And then that the Saints and the Falcons and the Panthers would, you know, sort of battle it out for the top three spots. And they were all potential playoff teams. And now, boy, the Falcons and the Panthers are bad. And so that was unexpected and not a lot of fun for anybody.
Yeah. And I do think it is worth pointing out that both teams have suffered injuries throughout the season, some pretty significant. You know, the Falcons' injuries are pretty well documented. The Panthers, I think, suffered quite a few on the offensive line very early in the season, which arguably could have been a big contributor to Cam Newton's getting banged up throughout this season. So let's talk about this game, though. This is interesting. Falcons are 5-9. The Panthers are 6-8. So a win by the Falcons essentially ties them, but would put the Falcons ahead because they would have the better NFC South record. So the Falcons would actually be have the potential to finish second in the NFC South, which I don't know that that's something either team wants at this point, because they're essentially playing themselves out of draft position if they win this game. But that's a completely different conversation. So let's talk about the Falcons offense going up against this Panthers defense. And to me, this is interesting because, Brian, last week, even though it was a loss, the Panthers defense actually held New Orleans to 12 points in Carolina. They really, really stymied that normally high scoring, explosive Saints offense. So what was the story there? What finally clicked that defense showed up in a big way against a division rival?
Well, the secondary showed up, number one. Dante Jackson had himself a really good game as the Panthers' second round pick from this year. They managed to get forced turnovers. They had a couple on top of the 2-point conversion return by Dante Jackson, which turned into 2 points for the Panthers. Front seven wasn't all that great. They still managed to get after Drew Brees a little bit, but for the most part, it was just a Herculean effort by Luke Kuechly, who had one of his best games ever, and the secondary finally playing up to what they seemed like they had the potential to be earlier in the season. I think really a lot of it just had to do with the Saints struggled on offense, though, in general. Like, Brees was not on point. Their running game didn't really take off until the second half of the game, when the Panthers' defense had been on the field for, you know, like at least 10 years. So I wouldn't say it's entirely the Panthers defense's fault, but they definitely showed up to play. And I know they came in motivated because they wanted to win a game for Ron Rivera. And unfortunately, they didn't, because their quarterback has a noodle arm right now. And now he's injured and on the bench. So, yeah.
So, Gina, on the other side, the Falcons offense finally, for what felt like an eternity, was able to put up over 30 points. I know the team scored over 40, but one of those was obviously the pick six by Deion Jones. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, I was asked about this earlier this week. They're like, well, was it really the Falcons, or was it the fact they were going up against the Cardinals? but I think in many ways, at the bare minimum, they finally beat a team that they should have beaten. So what can you say about the Falcons offense after last week? Do you feel encouraged, or do you feel like it was a one-off? Or are you just sort of tossing up your hands and you have no idea?
You know, I think that it was encouraging because that 5-game skid was so disappointing and they just looked so lackluster and disinterested, and it was very frustrating to watch. And so I think that it was encouraging because they actually looked engaged. They looked like they wanted to try to win a football game. They looked like they remembered how to play football. So, you know, it was basically a big upgrade over the several previous weeks. And so, yeah, I think that it is encouraging, but does that mean that I think they can go on the road and beat the Panthers? Nah. This, you remember when they went up to Carolina and got shut out like 35-0?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so I covered that game in Carolina, and it was the worst. And so I just feel like after, and that was the season that they had the 6-game skid. And I think that that's why I feel that way. Like, that's why it reminds me of that, because they just are coming off this big losing streak. And yeah.
Yeah.
I do not think that they will beat the Panthers.
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough to win up there. Brian, the news came out this week, and I don't know how much of a shock this was to Panthers fans. I was a little bit surprised by it, that Shaq Thompson was going on injured reserve for the Panthers. So it seemed like he was having a pretty strong year out there with Kuechly and Davis. How big of a loss is that for this Panthers defense?
It's a bigger loss than Panthers fans are going to give him, because the Panthers defense was overall just not performing well. He's slowly stepping into more of a role and kind of like supplanting Thomas Davis as far as being the number two guy next to Luke Kuechly. Davis was still involved this year, but Thompson had his chance to really step in and show what he's got. And he led the Panthers linebackers in sacks. He had several multi-tackle games that were really good. I don't know if he's ready to be the next Thomas Davis in this defense. I don't know if they're going to be able to trust him with that, but regardless of that, the linebackers behind him that would step in and play for the three linebacker sets or the sets where Thomas Davis comes out are not nearly on his level. So it is a loss. I'm not really surprised by it, because at this point, the Panthers have basically mailed it in and said, you know what, we're not making the playoffs. Let's not make any injuries worse than they have to be. So I was a little shocked just because I hadn't heard he was injured, but I think it was just one of those, it's like, okay, he's got an injury where he could play hurt for the next 2 weeks, or we could just let him rest it off and not risk another much longer injury. So.
Sure. Yeah, it makes complete sense. Gina, back on the Falcons side with the, we know at this point what Julio Jones is capable of. Matt Ryan, despite the down season, is putting up yet again some ridiculous numbers, career numbers in some regards, comparable to his 2016 MVP season. We lost Edo Smith this week, who was looking really, really, really good as a rookie running back. But the one thing I want to ask you about, because this is an area you and I have talked about a lot in the past, and this is the offensive line. And I know your background with your father, you do have a lot more insights into the offensive line and mm-hmm. really how that functions. And the Falcons have been, it seems like the past few weeks, they were trying out Zane Beatles at right guard. And then it seemed like in the last game, they were rotating him and Ben Garland out throughout the game, Tyson Braille at right tackle instead of, you know, Ryan Schrader. What do you think about what they're doing with the offensive line? Do you think that this disruption is part of Quinn trying to wake guys up, or do you feel like they're just trying to throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks?
I get the feeling that they're just trying to see if they can find some combination that works. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I think that they're throwing guys in there, one, because everybody's playing kind of poorly, and so it's easy enough to justify. And then two, because they want to see if there's some combination of guys who can actually function together. But the problem is, when you're switching it up so much, those guys don't have time to develop the chemistry that they need.
Right.
And so I think that it is part of the problem.
Yeah. So it almost seems like within the experimentation itself is creating issues. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
So this is going to be an interesting matchup. I mean, honestly, Carolina they still have Kawan Short in the middle, a very familiar foe in Dontari Poe. Addison coming off the edge has oftentimes given Jake Matthews fits coming off that right edge. So this is an interesting matchup. That Falcons offensive line that looked okay in this past game going up against a Panthers defensive line that has struggled a little bit this season in necessarily getting to the quarterback. So I think this could be the potential matchup to watch in this game. So Brian, any final thoughts as we move into Sunday about this Falcons offense going up against the Panthers defense? Something to look out for.
look out for the defensive backs because they played a pretty good, specifically the corners. I think James Bradbury did a decent job against Michael Thomas, and Dante Jackson continues to, despite a lot of the issues with this defense, Dante Jackson continues to show that he probably would have been worth a first round pick by any other team. I don't really know why he made it that far into the second round, because he's a guy with elite speed. He's very, very good at playing the football. He's very scrappy. He's a good tackler. I love him. He is Bay. Dante Bay. But he...
That's not creepy at all.
Him against like Calvin Ridley should be a really good matchup to watch. And I think he's starting to really progress into a guy who doesn't really look as much like a rookie as he did earlier in the season. I think he's starting to get it. He's just one of those players where he's athletic enough to make up for his mistakes, and I think that he will have an impact on Sunday regardless of how bad the Panthers' defense is.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I think it that could be a matchup arguably that we see for the next 5, maybe even 10 years within the NFC South is Calvin Ridley and Dante Jackson.
How old is Calvin Ridley? Isn't he like 36, though?
It's 42, I think.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, he and Matt Bryant are the only players on the team who are older than I am.
Oh, boy. Let's see here. 16 minutes. That is our... That's the cold open right there. So... I do want to point out, though, that I believe Cal Ridley's first touchdown came on a slant against Dante Jackson in the game in Atlanta, the second game of the season. So,
That wouldn't surprise me at all. So,
yeah, in fairness, I think that points to the fact that these guys are going to match up and that this could be an ongoing matchup. So, definitely something to watch, because I do think we've seen Bradbury match up more with Julio in the past. So Jackson will probably be on Ridley throughout the game potentially. So, definitely a matchup I think I'm going to be looking forward to. So let's flip the script, and now let's talk about, because this is going to be really interesting, because we just got word this week that Cam Newton will not be playing. And for anyone who's watched him the past few games, and I do make it a point to try to watch almost all the NFC South games, and it's been clear, at least for it has seemed like a good portion of the season, that Cam Newton's arm has not been healthy. He is not the same Cam Newton. I think the coaching staff finally realized that with the playoffs essentially out of reach. They finally decided that he needed to rest instead of trying to play through this injury that has been plaguing him. So, Brian, I'm going to go to you first. What took so long for the coaching staff to realize that Cam's struggles were just too much to overcome?
I mean, it really comes down to that you have a playoff opportunity. You have a franchise quarterback who wants to play. So if he wants to play and you want to go to the playoffs, what's the problem here? And I understood after watching it for a few weeks after the Steelers game that he wasn't doing well, and they would bring in Taylor Heinicke for like really deep passes. I think that's just really it. Like, this offense is built around Cam Newton. He's still a threat running the ball no matter how messed up his shoulder is. And I think they were just trying to like let him work through it and see if maybe it was something where he could make it happen even if he was hurt. But honestly, after watching 6 weeks of Carolina football, specifically their passing game, continue to degrade, they probably should have deactivated him sooner. But at the same time, they didn't have a contingency plan. They didn't have a Nick Foles. Like, they didn't have a guy where they could trust him to win, to make the playoffs and win games.
Right.
So I get it in that sense, but it does suck to have seen those games where Cam like clearly was making the right throws at times, but just couldn't put enough on it. So that's the value of a backup quarterback. I mean, it's a good case study into exactly how much a team should invest in a good backup quarterback. Because Taylor Heinicke is a nobody essentially off the streets, where they had Derek Anderson for a long time who could win games in a pinch.
Yep.
Teams like the Eagles, like I said, Nick Foles won him a Super Bowl as a backup. It's a good thing for coaches to look at and say, you know what, we may need to invest more in a backup quarterback because that could have saved this Panthers team.
Yeah, definitely. Gina, from an outsider's perspective, and especially since we get to see the Panthers twice a year, and we get to see Cam Newton twice a year going against the Falcons, how big of a deal do you feel like this is for the Falcons defense in that they're not having to defend against a 6'5" monster on the other side that, you know, normally has a rocket arm? How big of a deal do you think it is that Cam Newton is not going to be under center on Sunday?
I mean, I don't know anything about Heinicke, really, but I do know that there's no chance that he is half the quarterback that Cam is. Cam is just really good. You know, he is a superior athlete. He can make plays with his legs. He is not always the most accurate passer, but he can get it done. So, yeah, I think that it is a very big deal to the Panthers. But in the grand scheme, with the way that both of these teams have played this season, it's also not a big deal because this season is just over, basically. So
it's two more games of misery. We're both just, yeah, we're suffering through.
That went in a very nihilist direction.
Eat Arby's.
Yes.
So, Gene, I'm going to go back to you on the next question, and that is, again, I do want to caveat this with the fact that it was the Arizona Cardinals with a rookie quarterback, but the Falcons defense really played well on this past Sunday. And it's sort of a similar question to what I asked you before. Do you feel like this performance can carry over? In particular, the pass rush finally seemed to get home a little bit more consistently. The Falcons seemed to use the blitz more in this game to try to generate pressure, and it worked with guys like Brian Poole contributing. Mm-hmm. What did you see Sunday against the Cardinals that you think maybe will or will not translate when they go on the road against Carolina?
You know, I've got to take that performance with a grain of salt because the Cardinals are so bad. So it's like, I just feel like we've got a large enough sample size to work with this season. We saw that the pass rush was trash. And so just because it was good once doesn't mean that it's going to carry over into the last two games. That said, you know, they did look better. I mean, they looked like they were more on top of their assignments. You know, they played with more intensity. So I don't know if they can turn that on again on the road against a division foe, but if they can, then yeah, I think that we will see another improved performance.
And I do want to point out that after the Falcons gave up the first touchdown to the Cardinals, and actually I think you can go back and point to the Deion Jones pick six, that really seemed to wake up the team on both sides of the ball. That's really when the defense sort of picked it up. It's when the offense sort of picked it up. And that game really took off for the Falcons because it really did seem up to that point that both units were lackluster. And I think that does speak to the fact that Deion Jones is such a critical leader on this defense, and that when he was back in there and he makes this big play, another – I mean, my God, this guy has like three or four pick sixes in just his first few years. Another big play from Deion Jones, and it wakes up the entire team, and they blow out the Cardinals. Finally, a big win. It felt like having Deion back there, having him make a play, gave this team some hope. Even though there's no playoffs ahead of them, at least it felt like it woke them up from this slumber that you mentioned that they were in for the past 5-6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing that really stands out over the course of the season is that Marquand Manuel would talk about Deion like when he first got back to practice and what a difference it just made in the guy's energy level with Deion back on the field. And then when Deion went back to, you know, calling the defenses again, he said that it's like having another version of himself on the field because Deion knows all the calls and everything. So, yeah, his leadership is tremendously important to that team.
So, Brian, final question to you with this Panthers offense. With Cam out and knowing how important he is to this offense, is the Panthers offense going to essentially be McCaffrey at this point? What can we expect? You know, Falcons fans don't know much about Taylor Heinicke. Is McCaffrey, do you think that Sunday McCaffrey is going to be the focus for the Panthers offense?
I think you're downplaying the importance of Taylor Heinicke here. First of all, he stepped in for Cam Newton whenever he had to throw Hail Mary passes, so therefore he must have a good deep pass.
Fair enough.
Hail Taylor. Second of all, Taylor Heinicke is going to run over somebody because I need this Meineke Heinicke gift to work out on Sunday. Oh, I actually think Carolina will be super aggressive with throwing the football on
really?
Sunday because defenses have not respected Carolina's deep passing game. And it was even said by Jarius Wright this week that defensive backs straight up said the Panthers aren't going to throw it deep. We don't have to play that because they couldn't.
Wow.
I think that at this point they're gonna really see what they have with Heinicke, and I really think they're gonna let him throw the ball quite a bit. I think McCaffrey will still be a huge deal. Not to say that like Heinicke will be the center of the offense, but I think you're gonna see him flinging the ball deep a little more than you would expect.
Very interesting. I think our Falcons listeners will find that something that they will want to focus on this upcoming Sunday is whether.
I may be completely wrong, by the way, just so you know, but I just think, logically speaking, when you haven't been able to throw the ball deep all season and you have a guy who can, maybe you should. So maybe that's just me. I'm not an NFL coach.
I would also argue in favor of that at this point for both teams, there's nothing to lose. There's the playoffs are out of reach. And really, I think for both teams, this is a time where it's sort of optimal to begin evaluating some of your young guys, evaluating guys a little bit deeper on the roster and figure out what you have. So if you've got this quarterback that you know can throw the ball deep, why not let him throw deep? If you lose with three or four interceptions, it's not like it's going to end your season. Your season is already over. You may as well let him fling it. So I think that is actually a fantastic point and something for fans to pay attention to. This could be a very interesting game on Sunday, purely from the standpoint of these are two teams that have nothing to lose. They're out there playing essentially for pride, and this could be a very eclectic game. We may see things that we wouldn't normally see if, for instance, both teams were still in the playoff race. So with that said, we're going to close out with a final segment, and that is the single player to watch out for in the upcoming game. So, Gene, I'm going to start with you. Who is the one player between the Panthers and the Falcons that you think could make a big difference and potentially a game-winning difference in this matchup on Sunday?
Gina knows the answer.
I'm just going to say.
Gina knows the answer to this question. Oh, my God. Come on.
Julio Jones. Mm-hmm. Although it's basically going to be a matter of whether he plays or not. He's missed practice, both of these days with Calvin Ridley's tendency to drop the football and Hooper having one target and no catches last week. And then, obviously Sanu is pretty reliable, but if Julio can't play, I do not feel good about the possibilities.
Yeah, he is inarguably one of the best receivers in the league, and missing him is going to be a huge factor as it has been in the past. Brian, I'm going to go to you on this one. Same question. Who is the one player on either roster that the Falcons fans need to look for on Sunday that could have a huge difference in this game?
Well, obviously it's Taylor Heinicke. I mean, he's going to throw three touchdowns.
That is a hot take.
But if we wanna go ahead and not rehash the same points I made earlier, I actually think that Curtis Samuel will be the guy to watch simply because in the preseason, him and Heinicke had a really good connection, and Samuel is good to score every four times he touches the ball.
Interesting.
Which is just insane.
Y'all know where he went to school.
Yes,
right?
Ohio State University. I'm aware. Vina.
The Ohio
God
State University.
Damn it.
But yeah, his production has been very insane this year. Aside from like last week, from week one to last week, every four times he touched the ball, he scored. Every four times. And Heinicke made him look really good in the preseason because they must have had some kind of like backup quarterback to backup wide receiver connection. I really think Heinicke's going to look for him, and he's a game breaker. He's got really good talent when he gets the ball in his hands. He's very underrated as a wide receiver. I think that Heinicke's going to look his way a lot, and I think that Gina will be very happy even if the Panthers win on Sunday, because I think that Samuel will at least get a fair amount of touches that'll make him look good.
Wow. There you have it. For me, I'm actually going to go with a name we discussed a little bit earlier, and that is Deion Jones. I think
Taylor Heinicke.
No,
okay,
not Taylor Heinicke. Although I think that was a very, very good pick. I'm going with Deion Jones simply because when it has come to matching up with running backs, guys that can execute both as runners and as receivers, like McCaffrey can. In the past, Deion Jones has been the equalizer for the Falcons defense, and he is back. He did have a little bit of a rough outing against Arizona in giving up a touchdown, but if the Panthers are going to lean some on McCaffrey, I think Deion Jones is going to be critical to keeping that matchup from being exploited. So Deion Jones is going to be the guy for me in that matchup. And with that, we're going to go to our predictions for Sunday. And I know in the upcoming Sadness Injury Bowl, we aren't quite sure what we want out of this game. I'm not sure what I want out of this game. I'm sort of like Schrodinger, and I want both the Falcons to win and to have a high draft pick, and I know that's not possible. So, Gina, I'm going to go to you first with your prediction. How do you think this game is going to play out on Sunday?
I think that the Falcons are the team that we saw over those 5 weeks. I think that beating the Cardinals does not give me any confidence that they'll actually win in Carolina. And so I'm going to say 21-17.
All right. Panthers. Brian, I turn it over to you, sir. How do you see this game playing out on Sunday?
I think that it will be a 31-21 victory for the Carolina Panthers because they will have a dimension of their offense they haven't had with Norv Turner at the helm since probably like week 4. And I think Taylor Heinicke will throw 3 touchdowns, and I think one of them will go to Curtis Samuel.
There you go. I think it's tough to win 2 games against the same team in the same division year over year. The Falcons did win the earlier one. I do think the Panthers will take away this one, and I think this may be a first on the Falcoholic podcast. We've got all 3 people predicting a Panthers win. I think it will be close simply because the Falcons defense is playing a little bit better and the Panthers are missing Cam Newton, but I still see this one playing out for the Panthers. I'm going to say 17-14, relatively low scoring game with the Panthers getting the home win. So with that said, Brian, thank you again for joining us on the podcast, buddy. It has been great to have you on. We missed talking with you. We've got to do this more often. But why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you and what you guys have going on?
Well, you can find me at Brian Beversluis on Twitter, but honestly anymore, I'm mostly running the Cat Scratch Reader handle, which is at Cat Scratch Reader without the last E. So it's Cat Scratch Reader, R-E-A-D-R. So that's the handle I'm running. So feel free to check that out. Once Heinicke throws his first touchdown on Sunday, I will be trolling all over the place. So feel free to check that out.
Awesome.
Other than that, I'll be writing the Monday Morning Optimist, which is actually our biggest piece every week. It's usually has the highest traffic. It's usually our way of either being like, oh, the Panthers won. Look at that. Yay, we're optimistic. Or, oh, the Panthers lost, but here's like one thing to be optimistic about. Everything sucks. Bye. So that'll be my column on Monday. So feel free to check me out there. But yeah, hopefully we have a entertaining game, to say the least, and hopefully there's no bad injuries to any players who are critical to the teams.
Amen to that.
So yep. I'm just there to enjoy it. I'm just here to enjoy it at this point. Season's over. Let's have fun with the last 2 weeks.
Absolutely, grab drinks, enjoy it. Pray for no injuries. I am 100% with you on that one, Brian. Gina, remind our listeners where they can find you, what you've got going on.
You can find me on Twitter at Gina Thomas, where I'm usually talking shit about the Saints or posting pictures of my dog. And you can find me at thefalgaholic.com. I am also slandering the Saints there every chance I get. That's the only fun that I have left in this season, is just that hoping is that they make an early playoff exit.
We're all clinging to, and I think even Brian will join us in that desire to see the Saints exit the playoffs early. All right, so yes. Thank you, Brian. At least we know we have that much in common. All right, so for Brian Beversluis from Cat Scratch Reader and the Keep Sounding SB Nation podcast, for Gina Thomas, this is David Walker. Thank you guys for tuning in, as always, and we will talk with you next time.
Fuck the Saints!
Hi, I'm Karis Fisher. I want to tell you about another podcast you should check out. It's called Recode Decode. Every week, I talk to tech and media's key players about how they're changing our world. I interview tech executives like Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, political figures like Hillary Clinton, and media personalities like John Carreyrou, who literally wrote the book on Theranos. Once again, the name of the show is Recode Decode, hosted by me, Karis Fisher. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. See you there.